a republic. If you can keep it, Michigan and National Politics with veteran political strategist Mark Brewer and Jeff Timmer.
I'm Mark Brewer. I was chair of the Michigan Democratic Party for 18 years. Now I'm a lawyer and consultant to progressive nonprofits, political parties, candidates, and ballot question committees. I believe that a healthy democracy requires strong political parties which support free and fair elections.
I'm Jeff Timmer. I was executive director of the Michigan Republican Party and have advised Republican candidates at the local, state, and national level. Now, I'm a political nomad who's put what's best for the country above carrying water for my former political party.
Welcome to the debut edition of A Republic, If You Can Keep It. Every week, Jeff and I will have conversations with newsworthy guests and add our perspective to what's happening in Michigan politics, as well as Michigan's impact on national politics.
We'll be talking with leading figures in politics, the media, and the public eye about personalities, the issues, and the scandals that shape our politics. We won't pull any punches or treat Republicans or Democrats with kid gloves.
The title of our podcast honors the challenge to the citizens of the United States from Ben Franklin when he was asked what the Constitutional Convention had created. If nothing else, the last few months have shown the size of that challenge. Case in point, Jeff, we just saw the two parties wrap up their winter conventions here in Michigan. The Democrats were relatively unified, reelecting Lavora Barnes as party chair by acclamation, hearing a series of speeches celebrating the Biden-Harris victory, Senator Peters' reelection, and Democratic control of statewide offices, as well as half of the state seats in Congress. There were some internal party contests, which aren't unusual in the Democratic Party in my experience, but that convention was nothing compared to the Republican shootout. It looked like a divisive fight for party chair, ending up with a MAGA conspiracy promoter as party co-chair, and the former party chair calling for a state investigation after accusing her successor of bribing people with the party's money. So what do we have these days? Is it the Republican Party or the Trump Party?
Well, the answer to that last question, I think, is where we need to start. I think it's clear that the party should just change its name to the Trump Party. It's no longer the Republican Party that I've been a part of for the last 30 years. The convention, I think, underscored a battle between two Trump candidates, quite honestly. One candidate A was the former party chair, was Trumpy, but lost Michigan for Trump's reelection. And the new party chair couldn't have gotten elected without the support and endorsement of his co-chair, the aforementioned Michonne Maddock, who is pretty much a political neophyte novice. 4 years ago was a kook who stood on corners at street intersections in Oakland County waving Trump signs. That was her claim to fame, as if somehow that got Trump his 10,000 vote margin of victory in Michigan in 2016. But from that, she's become the most powerful Republican in Michigan.
So it seems like Ron Weiser, the newly elected chair and former chair of the Republican Party in Michigan, really was a shrewd political operative. He cut a deal with Michonne Maddock and got the support of her and her Trump supporters, because really Ron Weiser is pretty much the epitome of the Republican establishment in this state, isn't he, Jeff?
He is, and he has been for a number of decades. This is his third non-consecutive term as chair, and that's what's so astounding about the fact that he needed Michonne Maddock in order to get elected this time around. But shrewd, I don't know that I'd go that far, because I think, I think he thinks that he's shrewd in cutting this deal, but she can't be housebroken. And that's where I think he's going to find out that this is going to be a problematic deal. Once you sell your soul, the story usually doesn't end well for you. And I think that's what he's done here.
There seemed to be a lot of intrigue going on behind the scenes, because as I recall, Laura Cox, the outgoing chair, actually dropped out of the race several weeks ago, and then she got back into the race. And I know some folks were thinking that maybe that is, she became the candidate of the establishment, of the folks who were trying to block, the Trump-allied folks who were with Ron Weiser. So that back and forth really was intriguing, in and out, and so we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, we saw a real bombshell with her kind of 11th hour charge that Ron Weiser in his previous stint as chair had effectively bribed Stan Grott, who in 2018 was poised to become the party's nominee for Secretary of State. And then on the eve of the convention where he was about to be nominated, abruptly dropped his bid. And, you know, everybody at the time assumed it was a transactional deal. And Laura, you know, now 2 years later, Laura Cox exposed the fact that it was that $200,000 changed hands in the months, in the days, you know, beginning days after he dropped out of that election, that convention. And then in the couple of following months, he received $200,000. And so when you say that it was a surprise late entry into the race, it was, I think, a very calculated move by her to kind of rope-a-dope Weiser leading up to the convention, drop out, lay in wait. She had this information for 2 years. She was kind of waiting to sandbag him heading into the convention, thinking it could be a knockout punch. It wasn't. She got about a third of the votes. Weiser got two thirds, even with the scandal. But she did leave him with a bit more of a messy plate. She had filed a campaign finance complaint with the Secretary of State. Weiser, as soon as he became chair, immediately tried to withdraw that complaint. And the Secretary of State said, not so fast. We're going to look into this. And this could be really revealing because it could roll back the veil on the party's administrative fund, which, as you know, is a non-reportable fund that's available to each party. And so there's never been the glare of transparency shown on the either party's administrative fund. But now with the claim of misdeed and malfeasance, there very well could be. This is going to be an interesting battle.
Right. Yeah, those allegations by Laura Cox were based on an internal review done by a very prominent law firm. I've read the memo that they produced. It's very serious, very thorough, and not easily dismissed. And I think it has provoked the Secretary of State's Bureau of Elections into looking at it. You're right about these dark money administrative accounts. They've existed since the late 70s and have evolved over time. They can fund a lot of things under Michigan law, redistricting, issue communications. But one thing they cannot fund are basically advocacy efforts in candidate campaigns. And it's arguably a contribution from the Michigan Republican Party to Grott's opponent that basically bribed him out of the race. And then also in that report, it indicated that Grott may have been paid to do some candidate work, and it would be illegal to use soft money from this administrative account for that. So I think there are plenty of things to take a look at in terms of the legal ramifications here. There are provisions of the election code, which forbid basically bribing voters at an election, in this case, a state convention. There may also be fiduciary issues about whether Ron Weiser violated his fiduciary duties. Apparently, there's a dispute at best over whether there was even a contract with Grott that he was paid this money, and was a huge sum of money for a very short period of time to do whatever it was he was paid to do, get out of the race and or do some work. But there's no contract. And so I think this could be, as you indicate, a real serious problem for the Michigan Republican Party going forward. And it could well lead to, say, an audit of that administrative account, as well as revelations about the internal financial operations of the Michigan Republican Party. I can say, as a former party chair, this kind of investigation, this kind of a complaint is your worst nightmare, because those accounts are private. There's a lot of plenty of legal things that can be done with those accounts, but things that you don't want to be sharing with the public. And we may be about to see a significant airing of the financial laundry of the Michigan Republican Party over the last several years.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I really thought that the explanation used by Weiser and you know, his former executives at the party during his last stint as chair, kind of justifying the work done by Stan Grott, you mentioned it opened them up, I think, to further scrutiny, because they claim that he was paid to do work on behalf of candidates to further the Republican cause and candidates in Macomb County specifically. And so they, in their own admission, they say that he was doing work on behalf of, and they don't specify between state and federal candidates. So they could not only open up a state complaint, but I think they've exposed themselves to a potential federal complaint as well.
No, that's a very, very good point. So that's where, you know, Ron Weiser and Michonne Maddock find themselves now with that. But we've also got this issue going on and it's going on all over the country, but also here in Michigan, of local parties, congressional district parties, county parties, actively censoring and otherwise trying to discipline Republican Party office holders, starting with Mike Shirky. It's extended to Congressman Meyer and Congressman Upton, you know, for their roles in the last several weeks in Washington. So it really does appear that there's a real sharp divide between the grassroots of the Republican Party in the state, the Trump-based grassroots anyway, and several of its elected officials who have been willing to hold Trump accountable for what he's been doing.
Well, that's why I said right at the outset that I think this should be called the Trump Party as opposed to the Republican Party. I saw today a story in the Detroit News that the Macomb County Republican Party on the southeast side of the state has censured Fred Upton and Pete Meyer for their vote to impeach Donald Trump. Macomb County is about 150 miles from the districts of Upton or Meyer, has no impact whatsoever. But in their statement, they say, we are the party that supports Donald Trump. We're the MAGA party. That's their own admission. That's how they self-identify. They've co-opted the name. And Donald Trump is the classic rhino. That's the pejorative term that's thrown at, Republican in name only. And Donald Trump and these Republicans who now occupy positions of power, especially at the local level, in many of these county parties in Michigan, are the epitome of what would be called a rhino. They were never seen in the Republican Party before. They support a Republican Party with no platform whatsoever. They adhere to no policy, no ideology. They exist only to advance and support one man. And that's what has become so toxic and so wrong with the Republican Party. You know, you and I have done battle over the decades within the arena of ideas and campaigns. This party stands for nothing except breaking things and supporting Donald Trump. And so that's what they seem to occupy to me. And I think that we'll see going forward. I think Ron Weiser has himself in a quandary between what he would like to see done and what those who've voted for him and I guess occupy the party positions across the state will tolerate and allow. And that's going to be a complete fealty to Donald Trump first.
Jeff and Mark return after a brief message.
I may never have met you. We don't go way back. Maybe we wouldn't even be friends if we did. But when you wear a mask, you have my respect. Because your mask doesn't protect you. It protects me. I wear my mask to protect you. Mask up, America.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
About Trump, he was once a pro-choice Democrat, and he came along in 2015 to 16 and frankly co-opted some of our Democratic messages, became very populist on issues like trade, and frankly exploited Democrats' vulnerability on that. Going back to the Clinton years, Democrats have consistently advocated for free trade, but as we pointed out in Macomb County among Democrats and others, we failed to take care of the workers who were then economically victimized by free trade. And that left them resentful and I think open to the appeals of a demagogue like Trump. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see now that we'll see if he's actually left the scene. He's clearly not left the scene. I think he's about to be the prominent speaker at the CPAC convention, the Conservative Political Action Committee convention this week. And he seems to be staking a claim, Jeff, to presumptive nominee in 2024. This is my party. I'm going to endorse against or for candidates, support the MAGA position. But I think it's a real challenge to the Republican Party and Ron Weiser here in Michigan to try to hold these two very, very different parts now of the Republican coalition together. There's a risk that many of the, I was just going to call them former Republicans at this point, who've been voting Democratic in Oakland County and Kent County and so forth the last couple of election cycles, may continue to stick with Democrats if they believe that the Republican Party they were once part of is now controlled by Trump. We'll have to see what happens. I think there's going to be a lot of pushing and pulling among the coalitions of the party. I don't think we're at what we'd call a realignment between the parties yet, but there's certainly a lot of conflicting pressures. And I think it's much more difficult for Wiser and the Republicans to hold their coalition together than it's going to be for Democrats, at least in the immediate near future.
Yeah, I think the fact that Trump is going nowhere is going to continue to be a real problem for the few Republicans who want to move on. I think that the whole notion of the post-Trump Republican Party, you know, Mitch McConnell comes out and makes a speech and condemns Trump after he voted to acquit Trump in the Senate. And that's reported by the national media as, oh, now the party's kind of moving itself, or some are trying to move it into this post-Trump era. I don't really think that that's going to happen. I don't think Trump's going to allow that to happen. The people who want to oppose Trump or purge Trump from the party are few and far between, or they're too damn cowardly to actually stick, you know, their necks forward and do that. We have to keep in mind that Trump exists to benefit Trump and to cause chaos. That's kind of his purpose in politics. And so when Trump says he's going to go out and endorse candidates, he's not endorsing candidates to try to build an enduring majority, a Republican majority. He doesn't give two craps about a Republican majority in the Senate. At this point, his motivation is to screw Mitch McConnell, because Mitch McConnell had the audacity to stand up and say something bad about Trump. He's been a very pragmatic and successful player in Washington and across the national Senate scene for a long time. And as he's carefully trying to recruit and build support for candidates, Republican candidates in key states, Trump's going to be looking, you know, how can I throw a skunk into Mitch's plans? And so if there's an open seat in Ohio, as there is with Rob Portman, where the Republicans are, because of the way Ohio's voting patterns are, would be favored to win, all else being equal, there's already a couple of very, you know, Trump candidates out there. Mitch McConnell may want somebody else, somebody from the congressional ranks, somebody from the statewide office ranks. And you can bet that if there's a preferred national senatorial committee candidate, that Trump is likely to weigh in opposite that. And I think this cannibal, I'm sure, you know, the Democrats are loving this cannibalism within the Republican Party. Mitch has made his bet. He deserves what he gets from this primary situation. He allowed Trump to become this monster that can devour his Senate majority, is what has happened in the last election. And I think Trump's vengeance now in his ability to command attention and command the Republican rank and file members is going to be Mitch McConnell's worst nightmare.
Well, this is going to pose a real dilemma for incumbent Republican senators who are up for re-election in 2022, right? And you just, you know, talked about that a little bit. Seems to me they've got options. I mean, I take a look at what Lisa Murkowski, senator from Alaska, did, or she was able to get reelected as a write-in independent candidate. Now, that may be somewhat unique to Alaska, but I wonder if that's an option for some of these senators in some of these states, or if, you know, it's an incumbent Republican who Mitch McConnell favors and there are three or four MAGA candidates in the race. Perhaps they come through, win a Republican primary, but boy, oh boy, they could have a tough time in a general election if the Republican Trump voters decide to stay home or support yet another candidate. It's a real strategic problem, the kind of thing that you and I would grapple with in our roles as strategists for the party.
Sure. And, you know, when you look at, you know, Michigan doesn't have a Senate race up in 2022, but we have Gary Peters playing a very prominent role in that battle for the Senate now, leading the Democrat senatorial campaign committee. And so I think that's going to be very interesting. And I'd love to talk to Peters maybe as we move forward through these podcasts, because it'd be very interesting to get his perspective on this national play for the U.S. Senate. But I think the same dynamic that we're seeing, the few, I guess you'd call them establishment Republicans, or, you know, people who were mainstream middle of the road Republicans before 2016, and how they're going to fare in the Republican Party going forward. I think we're already seeing some of the signs of how problematic that is. Some would say, we're early in the 2022 election cycle, but you and I both know that it's kind of late for the Republicans to have no credible front tier challenger for governor. And at this point, you'd normally see more than one willing to step forward. Right now, there's nobody of any credibility stepping up to challenge Gretchen Whitmer or Dana Nessel or Jocelyn Benson. Now, those races, you know, the down ballot races usually take a little longer to gel. There's no one from the congressional ranks who's stepped forward, and maybe, you know, the game of musical chairs that happens after redistricting may cause a late entrant into that race. If Bill Huizenga and Pete Meyer end up in the same congressional district, for instance, maybe one of them blinks and makes a run for governor. But that won't be until late in the game. That dynamic of the megas, they're not proactive in looking forward to building things. And that's why they don't have a candidate in Michigan right now. They would be, I think, positioned to take down any candidate who had that kind of broad appeal within the party between its traditional business support, its traditional large donor support, and maybe somebody who's still willing to bridge that gap and be Trumpy. But, you know, those people who maybe you and I would consider sane, normal Republicans aren't willing to step forward in this climate.
More coming up after this brief message.
Can a city have a soul? When does it go beyond glass and steel and become something bigger? Something alive. Offering us its people, where we can laugh with someone we just met and feel the touch of art on the human heart. Where we can find and its story. When does a city have a soul? When it's called Detroit and a quiet corner for two, or shout out at a concert with thousands. It's time to plug into something bigger than ourselves. It's time to meet the old masters and the new maestros. So tell the driver to keep the change. Let's take a sidewalk less traveled and come see what a real city feels like. It's time to meet what's new and what's next in Detroit. Downtown Playground of Pure Michigan. Your trip begins at Michigan.org.
This whole phenomenon we've been talking about at the national level is going to play out in Michigan. You know, how do you get through a Republican gubernatorial primary next year without pledging fealty to Trump, basically repeating and reinforcing all these hoaxes and all these claims about election fraud? And then particularly because Michigan is really unique in this regard, as you know, we nominate our attorney general and secretary of state candidates at conventions. Those are real party insider events. And, you know, a group like the MAGA Trumpers, I think, will essentially control the Republican Party nominating convention next year. And I don't see how any candidate, secretary of state or attorney general, or even the other candidates for Supreme Court and otherwise, get through that convention without pledging allegiance to Trump and everything he stands for. And those kinds of stances, those kinds of speeches come back to haunt you in the fall. From a political science perspective, set aside my Democratic hat, watching this process, it's very fascinating to see how this all plays out, culminating in the convention next year in terms of who's running that party and what kind of candidates do they nominate?
How it's likely to go in 2022 is really the same way it went in 2018. You saw Bill Schuette at the time, who was the front runner in that primary for the gubernatorial nomination against Lieutenant Governor Calley at the time, position himself as a very Trumpy. In doing so, won the primary going away, won it with ease, but then found himself completely ill-positioned to win in November. Not that he was going to win Oakland County, but he couldn't even approach the close margin of loss that Snyder had experienced just a few years before. He had his doors blown off in Oakland County. Schuette became the first and only candidate since Bill Lucas. Bill Lucas and Bill Schuette are the only two candidates in the history of the Republican Party to lose Kent County. That shows you what positioning yourself as a Trump candidate does to your chances in November. And then there's a further dynamic for anybody running for governor, is they have to immediately turn around. They win the primary at the beginning of August, and then they have to turn around and get their chosen running mate through a convention.
this is a harbinger of what became the Republican Party under Trump. Is in 2010, when Snyder had just won the Republican Party, had no real tentacles within the party, nominated Brian Kelly, who was a state rep at the time. On the first voice vote, suddenly, you know, a Tea Party guy named Wes Nakagiri from Livingston County, who nobody had ever heard of, won the first voice vote at that convention. The wheels came off. Everybody, you know, said, what's going on? And, you know, pulled people together behind the room, you know, behind the stage. Threats were made, deals were cut, and suddenly Wes Nakagiri came out from behind the curtain and said, I'm withdrawing my nomination and supporting Brian Kelly. I urge unanimous support. That was before there was any real organized effort from the kind of the grassroots fringes of the party that's now become mainstream. So even if there was a viable challenger to Whitmer who could unite the factions as they are in the Republican Party, they're going to have to immediately acquiesce to whatever the mob wants at that convention and been picking their running mate, which is going to further doom their chances in November. If I'm Gretchen Whitmer, I'm liking the position I'm in right now.
Right. But I also think Democrats can't take this for granted either. This will be Biden's first midterm. And historically, that's not been good. And I think however large this group of MAGA Republicans are, they are well motivated. I mean, they firmly believe, wrongfully, but they firmly believe that Whitmer, Benson, and Nessel stole the presidential election from them in Michigan. So they are highly motivated. Democrats always have a challenge with our turnout in midterm elections. So I think there's reasons why we, as Democrats, can't take it for granted either. But you make some good points. I mean, maybe we see one of these MAGA Trumpers as lieutenant governor candidate. You know, is Michonne Maddox's rise not over yet, Jeff? Does she or somebody like her end up on the ticket as lieutenant governor candidate?
Well, you know, her husband serving in the state house, maybe running for the state senate, depending on how lines come down in Oakland County. I wonder how long the Maddox types, the Pat Kolbeck types, would be happy being second fiddle to the so-called establishment types. I don't think that they're necessarily going to be willing to take the co-chair spot or the lieutenant governor spot continually. I think that they do recognize the power and influence and capabilities they have to control not only who the nominee is, but demand that somebody from their ranks becomes the gubernatorial candidate. I think we're more likely to see somebody like Pat Kolbeck lead the ticket with a second MAGA candidate, whether it's Mike Maddox or somebody else in the second position, than we are to see somebody like a Bill Huizenga or Candace Miller type of candidate who could have united the party.
Yeah, Kolbeck has really taken advantage of the situation. I was down at the TCF Center in the day after the election as they were finishing the processing of the absentee ballots. He was there, and he has not missed an opportunity to put himself forward at the front, at rallies, at legislative hearings, and so forth. He sees this as his opportunity to resurrect his political fortunes after getting defeated back in 2018.
If there's a mob of crazy, you can bet that Pat Kolbeck is going to find an opportunity to either join it or jump out in front and try and lead it somewhere.
So with that, I think we'll wrap it up for this week. I'm Mark Brewer. Thank you for listening to A Republic If You Can Keep It with me and my longtime friendly foe, Jeff Timmer.
I'm Jeff Timmer. Please subscribe to A Republic If You Can Keep It on Apple Podcasts, and be sure to listen each week as Mark Brewer and I talk with noteworthy guests about Michigan and U.S. politics.
A Republic If You Can Keep It is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.